VentureCast.
What I would give back to you is the answer to the second question of what can you do, what can I do for you, is this, is create an internal environment that helps me reassimilate in a healthy fashion so that I don't lose my sense of purpose and end up in a place that's very undesirable.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. This is another special Wednesday morning episode brought to you by our sponsors, Jeremy Clevenger Fitness and the Sasquatch Flag Company. Both of these sponsors help me bring these shows to you each and every week, so I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. I have another great show lined up for you today, but before we get started, I just want to remind you to check out the leadership books I've written on either Amazon or my website, johnsrennie.com. This year, I'm offering a new way to purchase all of my books for a discount. I've bundled the books into what I call the Qualified Leadership Series, and you get all three books for 15% off the individual prices. This offer is only available on my website, so check it out if you're looking to step up your leadership game this year. Also, I want to remind you that Deep Leadership is ranked as a top 100 management podcast in the U.S. and now in the U.K., and I wanted to thank each and every one of you for listening in each week and sharing these episodes with your friends. You have helped this show become a top-performing podcast, so thank you very much. Today, we're going to be talking about hiring military veterans, and my guest is retired United States Air Force Command Chief Master Sergeant Dave Nordell. Military veterans have some of the top skills and experiences that will help accelerate the performance of your organization, but there are some things you need to consider when hiring veterans. And Dave is an expert in this field, and he breaks it down for us in this very informative discussion. Now, if you have veterans working for you or you're thinking about hiring military veterans, you need to listen to this important conversation. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by a returning guest to the show, Dave Nordell. Now, you might remember him from back in episode 141. Dave is a retired United States Air Force Command Chief Master Sergeant with over 30 years of service. He served as a medic all over the world, including a tour in Iraq. He is the author of the best-selling book, Giving Back, Life in Leadership from the Farm to the Combat Zone and Beyond. And I'm excited to talk to him about the idea of why companies need to hire more military veterans as leaders and what those companies need to do to prepare to bring these leaders on board. So, Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, thanks. It's good to be back.
It's good to see you again. Absolutely. I really enjoyed our first conversation, and you and I have stayed in connection over, you know, the course of the past year, and I'm just happy to have you come back on the show. I always say that once you're on the show, you're part of the Deep Leadership family. So this is just this is like a family visit.
Well, you've been helpful. And when my mind runs down wild rabbit trails, I usually pick up the phone and call you because you usually got the perspective to make it sound real. So it's good. No, it's great. I love it.
I love it. So I thought we'd dive into some areas about, especially the idea of veterans coming into the workforce and what's happening these days. You and I were talking before the show started. There are a number of veterans that are transitioning right now. Tell us a little bit about the statistics that you're aware of, and then let's talk a little bit about what that means for employers and also the veterans that are making those transitions.
Sure. So, you know, a veteran experience when they're transitioning, and you probably went through it too, is called TAPS. And you go to an 8-hour course and they tell you how to sit up straight and wear a tie and switch your resume around to some, you know, different language so civilians can understand it. But every day, the Department of Defense releases 1,300 people. Then they make them veterans. Those are retirees. Those are people that have served for 4 years. And they bring their families with them. So a small town of 5,000 people every day leaves the Department of Defense and they go out into our nation and they look for jobs. And so what do they come with? And, you know, we talked about this earlier. what does a veteran look like on their first day out when they when they get online, they hit the button to apply to your organization, they've got their resume all fluffed up, and you know, and what do they look like? Well, if you've been in for 2 years or 32 years, you've been institutionalized. I mean, there's a whole culture in the DoD that institutionalizes you to a point. So I liken it this way. If you were in prison for 30 years and you got out and I just dropped you in the middle of town, odds are you're probably not going to do well, right? You probably need some skills. Probably need to know what a cell phone is and all the other things that go along with society. Well, it's really not, you know, for those listening out there that, that aren't veterans and they haven't been around many, it's not that indifferent. The language changes, the routines change. We're very structured. Veterans are very structured. They're very centered around the person to the right and the person to the left of them, what we call shipmates and battle buddies and wingmen. And they're very formed around community and that cohesion of a team. And they go into civilian organizations and they're riding for the brand, right? We've had our name on our shirts forever. We had United States Navy or United States Air Force and had our name on our shirts forever. And we all identify and we wear a uniform like a big, giant team. And you go into a civilian workforce, and usually the first phenomenon that sets you off a little bit is you show up 15 minutes early for a meeting like you're supposed to, and it doesn't start until it's 5 minutes late. And that's a very natural thing. And it's because people filter in an organization. They're coming from another meeting. It's very well understood, and it's accepted. To us, it's just a grain of sand in our sock, right? It just starts to drive us crazy. The language is different. The camaraderie may not necessarily be there at a level that, that we fully appreciate. And so that can give you a sense of feeling kind of lonely and you miss out on some things. And we don't have to get into too much of it today, but there's a mental health component that goes along with that, especially if you have trauma and those type of things. But the statistic that's really overwhelming is because of that, because of organizations that they may be veteran friendly and they may appreciate what veterans bring, but they're not veteran ready because there's that gap of this understanding of what the makeup of the veteran is. And so 43 out of every 100 veterans that are hired tomorrow will leave their job within the first year based on this phenomenon. Mm. And that's a turnover rate that's unacceptable to any company. And quite frankly, employers probably don't get the advantage of having an exit interview where they talk like I just did. A veteran's not going to talk like that. They're not going to say, you know, I'm depressed and I don't like working there and your meetings start late and I've lost camaraderie and there's no brotherhood and I don't feel the teamwork. Values alignment's a huge thing. You know, if you put your values on the wall, but you don't demonstrate them, you know, we as military people, that's a huge thing, right?
Yeah. And
all of a sudden you feel disconnected from that. Well, that doesn't have to happen. If you have a veteran-ready organization, which I guess we can delve into and you and I already talked about, if you have a veteran-ready organization, you can have things in place that aren't any indifferent to other people that join your organization. So like I told you, John, if somebody wheels into your office to do a job interview in a wheelchair and they're deaf in their right ear and you're going to hire them, you already have a plan for them. You know what their cubicle is going to look like. You know what the bathroom stalls need to look like. You know what the width of the hallways need to be. Somebody's going to get appointed to get this person out of the building during a fire. And you're going to have a conversation with the rest of the staff on the challenges of the individual so that you can better accommodate them. But we don't do that for veterans.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you know, ADA tells us that we have to make reasonable accommodations for someone that has some sort of a disability. And we do that. And I would say this, the veterans don't have a disability. They're just coming from a different world. I think that's the big thing. And to your point, it took me 7 years to get my rudder in the water and to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, because I had, my dream was to be a submarine officer. And what do you do when you achieve your lifelong dream at 24 years old, right? Then you're like, okay, now what do I do? And, you know, like a lot of people, I went to go work in a big company, but all those things you mentioned, I struggled with. There was no team anymore. There was no camaraderie. There was no purpose. Like I had a purpose when I was in the military, right? I believed in what I was doing. And then I think military men and women and veterans, they live by a purpose. And then that purpose was gone. It's like, what am I here for? Oh, to make money for some big corporation. So I was missing something. I was missing my North Star. I was just really rudderless for a long time. And I think my companies did a pretty good job, but I didn't I couldn't figure it out. I mean, it took me a long time to figure it out.
That purpose word is actually kind of dangerous, John, because if you come with trauma and you come with PTSD, or you come with moral injury, that's a whole other podcast. That's a whole other thing to talk about. But you should make a high assumption as a hiring employer that your veterans are coming with these things and also some sort of relationship with substance. And so when you lose that sense of purpose, right, which is that's your foundation, it makes working with all of these other things tougher. And so, yeah, if you can create an environment, which I've done some work on and I've set some things up and I'm going to start working here locally, or anybody else that is interested, I'm going to start working locally with people to go in and with HR departments and the C-suite, the C-level leaders, to say, here's the things, cost-effective things that you can do, and correlate that back to turnover. Because, you know, if you get a veteran comfortable, what they bring is unbelievable. I mean, yeah. as far as their work ethic and their leadership and those kind of things, it's an asset. It makes your community stronger. It decreases crime. It makes the city more attractive to the right kind of businesses and the right kind of higher education institutions, because that's the type of citizenry you have. And so there's just so much power in making the veteran's first experience and anything after, making their experience transitional. Not new, but transitional. I guess we could talk about transitional leadership, because that would be in there. So,
yeah, I think I like what you're saying. You know, one of the things as a veteran myself, I've hired a ton of veterans, over the past 30 years, but I sort of feel like I have the inside scoop. Like I don't know everything these sailors or Marines or airmen did in their career. I read their resumes and I'm like, I'm not really sure what that is. An Abrams tank? I don't know. Quite, okay, I can picture a tank, but I don't really know what kind of work that is, right? But I think I'm better able to sort of, take this puzzle piece and fit it into my puzzle better than other leaders, just because I was a veteran. But I think a lot of company leaders who maybe don't have a military background, they're lost when they're looking at either the resume or trying to figure out. Part of the problem too is there's a lot of misconceptions about veterans, right? And so I think for example, veteran leaders. Like one of the things I found when I first came out was I'd have hourly people say, "Oh, I heard you were in the military. You're going to start, barking orders." And I'm like, "I was in the military, but I didn't bark orders there either." Like there's some misconceptions about what we do in the military and what sort of experiences we have. And a lot of that is because of the media or because of, TV shows or what have you. And so I think there's a lot of misconceptions. But that's kind of, when you say a veteran-ready organization, part of that is, right, just for them to for the company leaders, HR departments to realize what they're getting when they get a veteran. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. Well, that's one. One is to realize, and then one is, how do you create an environment? So there's about 28 that I looked up recently, 28 companies, and they're all main companies: USAA, Clorox, JP Morgan, some of the larger banks. I could keep going on. And they have worked into their HR process that when they're onboarding a veteran, they say, "Listen, we have," and they know this. Most employers, if you ask them, "How many veterans do you have working for them in larger companies?" They can't find it. They just can't get their hands around it. You should know that number, down to the number. That should be part of your 10-second elevator speech when you're telling somebody about your company. You should say, "We're a veteran-ready company, and we employ 162 veterans."
Yeah.
Right? From all services. That's the first thing. That's the very first thing you need to know. The second thing is that when you're bringing them on, okay, so sometimes you attract people, right, especially in a competitive environment. You attract people by saying, "We have student loan repayment. We have the most competitive health benefits program going. We give full dental," whatever it is, right? They say that. Imagine if you're a veteran, you're competing for a job. You want this person to work for you. And they say, "Hey, every Thursday, we have veteran community time. the vets get to take an hour and either through video or in a room, right? It's veteran community time. It's just to get together and to reconnect. And you guys can talk about whatever you want to talk about. And if it's something that you think is productive in the company, then brainstorm it and bring it back, because you guys are problem solvers and you know how to do that. And you build those things in there. You make a big deal out of Veterans Day. You make a big deal out of Memorial Day in the right way. And you learn how to ceremonially go through those kind of things. When you do that, automatically, it takes away this ambiguity, this fear and pain that you leave with, because you've lost everything. You've lost your camaraderie and your foundation and all those things. And all you want is something that looks similar to that. And if you can create those environments, I think it's low cost. And then put somebody on your staff that speaks Klingon and, you know, Martian. that does that, that can interpret, right? Just put somebody on your staff that does that. And boy, it certainly helps in a large way. And I believe in my heart, John, that this is really the key to our mental health issues with our veterans.
Yeah.
Because this initial transition is where it starts to go wrong. And if employers would learn the stories, you know, when you ask a veteran to tell me your story, they tell you the story.
Yeah.
It's not some hallowed thing. They're not going to get down to the nitty gritty blood and guts kind of things, but they're going to tell you a story. There I was. I grew up on a dairy farm. You know, you heard my thing. I grew up on a dairy farm, wanted to be a plumber, ended up as a medic. There's a story, and they'll tell you. That builds a level of empathy that we're looking for. And I just think that this is easy, but I think that we look at it and we think, well, it's either not a problem or it's a really hard problem. And I don't think it's either. I think all the tools are there. You just have to transition it over into a veteran type environment versus ADA or anything else.
Yeah. And one thing that's interesting, because, you know, and I think I need to say one thing about it, like hiring a veteran is good, right? It's good, you know, but it's not a charity. In other words, my point is you're getting someone with some amazing skills, right? That has been given a lot of responsibility as a young person. In one way, I like hiring veterans because they also, in most cases, I've not found one that hasn't. They have grit, so they have the ability to persevere when things get tough. And especially as, you know, a small business owner like myself, I can't have somebody on my team that's going to quit when things get hard, right? Because things get hard a lot, and I want somebody that I can stand shoulder to shoulder with that's not going to give up when things get hard. So my point is that, you know, making accommodations for veterans is only going to increase your performance as an organization. If you can get one of these rock stars on your team, you're going to go far. But you got to learn how to speak to this rock star. You know, I think that's the point, is you're getting a major asset. And if you said, I think you said 43% leave.
43 out of every 100, yeah.
Yeah, leave within the first year, you're losing out on a rock star. So you better learn how to talk like a rock star, because you're getting such an amazing asset in your organization. And so, yeah, you've got to figure a few things out. You've got to figure out, you know, the way they talk, like you mentioned, they like to have camaraderie. They like to have a sense of purpose. They believe in doing things right and correctly. They have high levels of integrity, and they don't like when words and actions are in conflict. So these are basic things that you have to provide. What you get in return is this amazing employee, right? That's going to do crazy things for for your company.
It is. There you go. I'll just copy that section out of there and just lay it in there. The one thing that you edged on, John, and I know you've talked in your other stuff and in your writings, it's very prominent, but you keep it subtle so that it's not, it doesn't drive a whole bunch of emotion. But this values conflict thing is huge. It is a big deal.
Mm.
The words on the wall, right? So the Air Force core values are integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all you do. Okay, I'll never forget those things. When I went to look for my first job after I retired, and I got on the website of the company that I was going to interview with, I went straight to their values and I opened it up. And you know what? I wasn't looking at their values. I was looking for those values in their values.
Yeah.
Right. And if they had two out of three, which integrity and excellence tend to fly to the top and most, they had two out of three. I thought, oh, this is good. What I didn't realize was when I showed up, they were all over the walls, but they weren't all over the boardroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Because three-dimensionalizing a value is really hard work.
Mm.
And we're really in tune with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, here's the example for your audience. Two of them, actually. One will make you really laugh. Here's an example. If two soldiers, now I'm an airman, you're a sailor, so we're soldiers. If two soldiers meet and one outranks the other one, and the one that outranks the other one says, hey, your button's undone on your uniform. The guy with the button undone doesn't fix his button. He looks at the other guy's buttons. He makes sure that all of his buttons are squared away before he ever gives you the right.
So true.
Right? And yeah. So think about that in a civilian organization.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you're the boss and you're managing a bunch of veterans and you go, hey guys, you know, nobody should be wearing non-steel-toed boots in the work area. And you look over and the guy's got sandals on. That's a non-starter. I mean, you're already looking for your next job. You go to the computer and you open up Indeed and you start working on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next job.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And you know, some people may say, well, then I don't need those people. They're too sensitive or too soft. And it's not that. You got to remember that they're institutionalized. They can reform, but you got to give them time and you have to be sensitive to those kind of things. And when you see those violations, you need to address it. You know, do feedback.
Yeah.
I had a guy that I'm actually working through with. He's my beta test. And he told me, he said, this can't be that different. And he's a good leader. This guy's a high potential good leader. So it can't be that different. He said, to all my Marine friends out there, I apologize. I stuck up for you well here, though. He goes, I can't hire Marines. And I said, why? And he goes, they're lazy. And I started laughing. And I said, you're going to make my point for me. I said, Marines are not lazy. I said, Marines are the most highly trained people to do things that are the most counterintuitive to human nature, like running towards bullets. And I said, if you tell a squad or a platoon of Marines to take a city block, they're going to say, okay, don't mess with me. I'm going to go take the city block. And when it's done, they're going to come back and say, I took the block. But they're also going to take their rucksack off and they're going to sit down until you tell them which block to take next.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Now think of the value of that conversation that you and I just had for a CEO that knows nothing about hiring veterans and is losing, you know, 43 out of every 100.
Yeah.
That's a game changer.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Leadership skills are like any other skills. You need to practice them to get better at them. Best-selling leadership author John S. Rennie knows this. That's why he's written a new book called You Have the Watch. It's a guided journal for leaders designed to take you through an entire year of leadership training. By the end of the year, you will master 50 of the most important leadership skills. If you want to have a greater impact on the results and people in your organization, go to youhavethewatch.com and pick up your copy today.
This episode is brought to you by Jeremy Clevenger Fitness. As a high-performing leader, you know that leadership isn't about telling people what to do. It's about leading by example. And for most people, the one area that they're lacking when it comes to leading by example is their health and fitness. By improving your health and fitness, every other area of your life improves. But how do you get and stay fit as a busy leader? Well, you do what you've always done. You hire the best person for the job. Don't struggle on your own. Put Jeremy Clevenger on your team. Jeremy will work with you to take your physique, mindset, nutritional habits, and more to the next level with his step-by-step all-inclusive coaching program. Now, I've worked with Jeremy for the past year, and I'm in the best shape of my life. If you want to step up your game, reach out to Jeremy at apexperformancesystems.com to find out more and get your initial consultation scheduled with him today. This episode is brought to you by the Sasquatch Flag Company. The Sasquatch Flag Company is a family-owned business in New England that builds hand-carved American flags from seasoned white pine. Each flag is hand-built, and each star on the flag is hand-hammered and chiseled. No two flags are alike. They offer a variety of flag designs to honor the police, military, firefighters, dispatchers, and search and rescue personnel, to name a few. These stunning handmade flags look great in an office, a studio, the back porch, or above the fireplace mantle. They make the perfect gift for the veteran, first responder, or patriot in your life. Now, I love these flags, and I've been giving them as gifts for years, and I was a customer long before they became a sponsor. sponsor of the show. I can't recommend them enough. So if you're looking for that perfect, uniquely American-made gift to give away, or if you want to treat yourself, go to SasquatchFlags.com and get your order in today.
I was thinking as you were talking, as far as like the transition goes, one of the things that I struggled with personally was, you know, in the Navy, there was always a qualification process. So there was a process by which you knew how to get qualified on a watch station to earn your submarine dolphins, which was your, you know, your submarine warfare pin, which meant that you were a fully qualified submarine officer. So there was a process. You had to go seek out experienced sailors and officers, and you had to prove that you had the, you know, the knowledge of that system or that process or that procedure. But there was very much, you know, when you show up to a submarine, they hand you a qual card. And they said, all right. And they call you a nub. You're a non-useful body until you get those signatures, right? And so you know your job is to get qualified, right? So, but when you get to the, I remember getting to corporate America, and they put me in this back cubicle with a light that wasn't quite working right and a stapler. And then they told me my computer would be here in 3 weeks, but they had some problems with their computer supplier. And so I just sat there in the corner with a blinking light and a stapler for like several days. Like, what am I doing here? I mean, like, I didn't know, like, it was really bizarre. And I can imagine so many veterans have gone through that experience where they show up to their first duty station and it's like, here's your qual card. This is what you need to do. You got to go see this guy. You got to go do this. You got to wear this uniform. All right, got it. You get to the civilian world, it's like, you know, good luck. So right. Really, I felt lost for sure.
And then what do? You wander around from cubicle to cubicle.
Yeah.
Saying hi to people, trying to build your community.
That's exactly what I did.
And it's so funny. And then what do people do? They stiff arm you because they have their computer and they're working and they don't have time for the new guy.
Yeah.
And in a week, you're like, this place stinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's about, you know, it's a really interesting phenomenon. And quite frankly, with all of the issues that our veterans have on a variety of scale, this sense of purpose thing is really foundational for them having a healthy transition. Because they're going to have to do other things. They're going to have to work on their mental health. They're going to have to work on their physical health. They're going to have to learn to live someplace longer than 3 years. You know, I grew up at home. I lived there till I was 19. Now I've been in Montana 9 years. So Montana is in second place of the places that I've lived the longest in my entire life because I did 15 assignments in 30 years.
Yeah.
You're moving all of the time. But I never had this assimilation problem. When I went from England to Japan, I didn't have an assimilation problem. One is I knew somebody because I'd been in long enough that eventually we reconnected from other places. I knew somebody. And the other thing is they're all my brothers and sisters.
Mm.
And they spoke the language. And oh, by the way, they had a thing called an in-processing checklist, which is what you're talking about. And you went through one by one by one by one by one. Yeah. Versus here's your desk, sit here, I'll be right back. And 3 weeks later, you see somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if I'm speaking to any of the veterans that are listening in that may be struggling with that transition, I would say that one of the things that I learned through the process was I figured out how to get qualified on my own. Like I created my own sort of qual card. And I said, all right, well, how did I learn when I was in the military? Well, I went to the more senior people and I observed them. I talked to them. I listened to them. I said, take me to the shop floor when you go, tell me. I would sit behind engineers and watch them do AutoCAD drawings. I'm like, okay, that's what we do. Okay. And we file them in this area. So I basically tried to learn how to get qualified on my own and sort of mimic, if you will, the process that we had in the military, sort of just invented it on my own. And as it turned out, that it actually worked really well. I mean, I went from being an associate design engineer in a cubicle. 5 years later, I was running my first manufacturing plant. So that doesn't happen very often in careers. And I'm not saying I'm anybody special, but what I did was I said, what did I learn in the military about how to get qualified? And I just said, okay, I'm going to do that here. And there is no qual card, but I kind of made up my own and said, how can I be a non-useful body in this company? Right. And that's what I did. And so veterans who are listening in, and you might be struggling with that transition. You might be struggling to find your true north. get qualified. Don't be a useful body, and you can figure out how to do that. Start learning to speak this new language, and you know, attack things like you did in the military. Mimic some of those processes. It certainly worked for me, and it can work for you. But it is a lot harder when you're trying to create things on your own, for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the antithesis to that is for the non-military people out there that are dealing with the military folks, it's really not hard. If you engage with somebody that's a veteran, that's sitting in a cubicle with a light flashing, if somebody would have popped around the corner and said, John, I know it's your first day. What are you thinking? You would have went, give me something to do right now.
Otherwise, you quit within the first week.
Yeah, right? You would have, you're right. You would have said, and so there needs to be a process for that, because you can hire somebody that's a non-veteran and they might be fine with that. They'll be like, man, I'm going to have an easy first week.
Yeah.
You know, you go home and your spouse says, how's your day at work? And you go, I'm waiting on my computer.
Yeah.
You know, I ran around and I met people in the office. The veteran goes home and goes, I don't know if I can work here.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No sense of purpose, no sense of duty, no sense of where I fit into this organization and why. You know, I often say that every sailor on a submarine is critical to the mission, right? And we only had 155 of us that we deployed with, and every single person was so important to making sure that we could do our job safely and then get home, you know, to our families. And I always feel that way about companies. Like every employee is valuable to the mission. And it's our job as leaders to let people know where they're adding value to the mission. What's my role in this organization to help it meet its goals? And I really think it's especially important as leaders to communicate that to the veteran. Here's the job you have, and here's how it relates to the mission of this company. Now, and when you do that, veterans go, oh, okay, I see where I fit into this, you know, this equation. And it's really important for them to have that sense of purpose.
I wonder what it would look like in a board meeting, in a C-suite meeting, if the CEO looked at the HR director and said, I want a slide every week of nubs. I want a nub slide.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I want to know how many non-useful bodies we have.
Yeah.
And what would the HR director say is, they'd say, I don't understand what that is. And when you explained it and you made people think about it, and you would say, so let's just play it out. A nub will only be a nub for 3 days. That's as long as they're allowed to be a nub.
Yeah.
And then they have to have some sort of sense of purpose within the organization.
Yes. Yes.
That doesn't even cost money, Joe.
It's so basic, so simple. I know on a submarine, as a junior officer, you're the nubbiest of nubs. You could do one thing. It was called a battery charging lineup officer, and you could get qualified within a week to be that role. And it was the worst job for a junior officer, but you could get qualified on it. And I remember someone told me, it's like, you can get qualified as a battery charging lineup officer. I was like, let me do it, because I wanted to feel like I was adding some value to this massive ship with all this technology and all these people. And I felt like I wanted to contribute in some way. And so they had this process, get qualified as this battery charging lineup officer. And like you said, there should be something like that in a civilian organization. What can I do right away to contribute? Because I think veterans want to be, they want to contribute to the organization. Sometimes they just don't know how.
Right. Well, and it's because it's back to the Marine example.
Yeah.
Right? They're waiting for orders.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
And that's the rub.
Yeah.
Right? That's the rub, because some people learn their new job by Braille, right? Yeah. I mean, they just feel like you did. You know, you just start feeling around and doing things. Other people have highly engaged supervisors, but they're hiring you for usually to fill a hole, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if Billy is the guy that works at the front desk at the clinic in the hospital, and his job is to do data entry and get people ready for their appointments, you're going to work really hard on that task, right? But odds are, when you say, Billy, I think you got it, you're on your own, Billy has no idea what that means.
Right.
Right? He can't take that task and relay it all the way to the operating room for the hip replacement. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Because you haven't done that for them. The veterans need to know that.
Yeah.
They need to know, and they understand. You know, Marines, I use Marines as examples because it's very basic. There's the stuff they do is very basic, and there's brilliance in that. You know, every Marine's a rifleman first. Yeah. Even if you're flying Harriers, you're a rifleman first. And they have to learn basic rifleman skills, you know, and how to pass ammo to the front. They have to know all of that stuff. It doesn't matter what your job is. There's some magic in that in institutions.
Mm.
That if you have one basic core thing that everybody is responsible for doing, that builds your camaraderie, because it's fire watch is what it is. Everybody's a fireman, right?
Yeah.
That's the one core thing.
Yeah. That's what we did. Yeah. And the Navy was, you had to be firefighting. Every sailor is a firefighter, and we're trained on firefighting. Yeah. And I think that's our common bond. Even today, you know, I use the analogy. We were taught to run towards the fire, not away from it, because this fire in a submarine is a deadly thing. And so the idea of run towards problems, not away from them, has always been my mindset. And it came from those days of being trained as a firefighter, you know?
Well, I think it's really easy, John. I think, you know, first of all, it starts off with veteran awareness. You got to know how many veterans you have. You have to. That's number one. Number two, it's veteran interaction. You have to interact with the veterans. You have to set up a forum to talk to them, to say, what can we do better? How, you know, think about this question. What should I do as the CEO of this company on Memorial Day? How should I talk and act? What should I do on Veterans Day? Right? I almost got in a fight at a golf course one time. I was a club member. It was right after I retired. And it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Memorial Day. So I went into the clubhouse and I said, you need to put the flag back to the top of the flagpole. And the guy goes, no, it's Memorial Day. And I said, no, you only do it till noon. And he goes, you don't know what you're talking about. And it turned into this thing, right? I thought I was helping him out, because you can't get promoted in the United States Air Force without knowing everything about the United States flag. And you have to. And right. The way it hangs, the material it's made out of, what can hang outside at night with lights and in the rain and all that type of stuff. And the guy was just resisting me, right? And I wanted to strangle him. I was like, this guy doesn't understand. I'm going to shake this guy. Well, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So if you ask questions like, what should we do for Veterans Day? That is an organization that actually cares about you.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of purpose, right? To be involved in shaping those kind of things. If you want to put on XYZ week for some sort of specialty, people know how to knock that out of the park. There's ice cream all over the place and pins and balloons and all that type of stuff.
Right, right.
And they miss it. They miss it on the things that are really important to us. So,
yeah. Those are really Memorial Day are very important to veterans. And again, like you said, talk to your veterans. How would you like to celebrate? I know, you know, we had traditions. Every plan I've ever run, we've had Veteran Day traditions that we had every year. And one of my plants, my first manufacturing plant, still carries on the same traditions that we started when I was the plant manager there when I was 32 years old, and they still do it, which is exciting to me to know they carried on that tradition. They found it very important. But you know, we bring in a cake. There was a gift for every veteran. But one of the things we did was we take down the American flag that had been flying on the plant all year long, and then we would raffle it off to one of the veterans. We'd have the veterans put a new flag up in the plant. And it was one of those things that you're honoring the flag. And we had a cake, and the youngest and the oldest veterans, you know, cut the cake. It was just a lot of little traditions that we had, and they still do it today, which is exciting to know that. But it was respecting the veterans, and it was doing some of the things that they were used to having in their, you know, in when they were in the military. Yeah.
And so there's the second word after purpose is respect.
Yeah, exactly.
I use a line out of respect. That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
I just really don't think it's hard, John. And, you know, to get into the, you know, the darker side of things. So I'm in Montana. We're number one in veteran population per capita in the nation. We're number one in veteran suicide per capita in the nation. We're not number one in veteran substance abuse, alcohol and substance abuse in the nation. And we're 44th in research.
Mm.
And we don't have veteran ready or employers. And I don't blame any of them.
Yeah.
an approach where it's just built into the culture, and it's very easy to do. There's people out here like me and you that could go into an organization tomorrow and give them the basic overview of things to do, the extra things that you would do, just like the person I described in a wheelchair.
Yep.
And quite frankly, I think that that's the beginning of the end of high-level mental health disorders and self-elimination.
Yeah. Absolutely. When you have a purpose and when you have a bond of brothers around you, the likelihood of going towards that where I don't have any way out is not there. So these are really essentials that we actually lose when we leave the military. We lose that sense of purpose and we lose our camaraderie. And that's like immediate.
So wrap your mind around this. A lot of people say, thank you for your service, right? And I don't like that. What I would like is tell me your story.
Yeah, yeah.
And we all will tell the story. But when people thank you for something, a lot of times they back that up with, oh, thank you so much. Is there anything that I can do for you?
Yeah, interesting. Yes, yeah.
So most employers and most companies that are non-veterans are very gracious to veterans because they hire and they say, thank you for your service. What I would give back to you is, the answer to the second question of what can you do, what can I do for you, is create an internal environment that helps me reassimilate in a healthy fashion so that I don't lose my sense of purpose and end up in a place that's very undesirable.
Damn, that's certainly well said. And that's the highlight of this discussion, just exactly what you said. Very important. Dave, this has been a great discussion. A lot of good, powerful information here. Tell us a little bit about what you're working on these days.
Yeah, so you mentioned the book. There's a second edition of the first book that came out. It's got an extra chapter in it, and then it's got a chapter that was written in conjunction with my best friend, who works on rural mental health and suicide in the farmer population. And so the second edition is out, but the precursor to that is to the next book, which is called The Cows Are Lying Down. And it's a book about quitting. Mm. And it's about good quitting, bad quitting, and then quitting when you don't have a choice. And it talks about some of the phenomenons. And it's great. I think it'll be a great book for business leaders to pick up because it's just, I think it takes them to places, using farm animals again, but it takes them to places that they may not have thought about as to why they lose people in their workforce or as to why they may want to be quitting their situations, and then how to handle yourself in really austere situations, like even when you have cancer and those type of things, and maybe you don't have a choice. So, and that's the way we're taking it. And then I told you, and this is way, way, way early in the thing, I told you we're working on a coloring book, a leadership coloring book. And I talked to a guy today that is a veteran friend of mine that has really struggled with trauma, and he paints all the time. And apparently, we're onto something because this painting and this coloring thing is really a form of meditation, forced meditation. People that don't meditate on their own, if they can get into coloring and doing those type of things, it slows you down. It removes you from the electronic world. It gets you back to the basics, and you can learn the leadership lessons while you're coloring in whatever the example is. Most of this is going to be about animals and mythical creatures and those kind of things. So I can see people out there smiling, going, what is he talking about? But I think it's going to be pretty, pretty fun.
Yeah, you and I have talked offline about it. So, when that's ready, your second book and this leadership coloring book, when that is done, let's have you back. Let's talk about it because I think it's neat. I think it's important that we find different approaches to get these lessons out there. And so, my hat's off to you for what you're doing to get the message out. And especially... For veterans and organizations that are hiring veterans. But then this idea of like, why are people quitting? Why are people leaving your organization, whether they're veterans or not? That's a really important issue because we do have a lot of turnover. And right now I would say it's probably more employees have a lot of choices and there's no stigma associated with having multiple jobs throughout your career. So if you can't provide a fulfilling job to your workers, they're going to go someplace else where they are You know, I have a friend of mine who always says, go where you're celebrated, not just tolerated. And a lot of cases, we as employees are just tolerated. We're not celebrated. And
I love it. In fact, now I'm going to steal that and I'll give you one to steal back. When respect stops being served, you have to have the courage to leave the table.
Yes.
And then veterans will do that.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Yep.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I'm excited to share the coloring book for everybody watching, there's a kangaroo piece to this, but John and I will hold that hostage for the next one.
And we got to give my friend John Brubaker some credit on the kangaroo. He's the one that taught me that lesson.
I love it. You know, a good lesson should be propagated and not kept a secret. Knowledge is power only when shared.
Yes.
So seed of knowledge passed on to me is about a kangaroo, which is awesome.
Well, it's going to be fun. So again, Dave, thanks for coming on the show. The book that we talked about in last podcast in a lot more detail, but I really encourage leaders to find it. It's called Giving Back, Life and Leadership from the Farm to the Combat Zone and Beyond. And there's going to be a new chapter in the new edition of it. So I highly encourage you to check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes to find it. And I encourage you to take a look at it. Dave, how can people reach out to you if they want to connect with you?
So maxbabconsulting.com. Is the way. And if you watch episode 141, you'll learn all about Max Fab and the flag. Yes. The flag's back here.
I see the flag and I know the story. And I would encourage listeners, if you haven't listened to 141, go back and listen. You'll know everything about that flag and that story, and you'll understand what Max Fab means. It's a very important message. And I highly encourage you to go back and listen to that, because that is I can't see you, Dave, without thinking Max Fab.
That's what it's all about, right? They made a flag. People love flags, and Max Fab became a flag in a combat zone. So there's something to it. And a guy told me, he goes, I can't imagine, maybe it was you, an E9 at any service saying maximum fabulous. And I said, well, let me tell you the story. And I just gave a speech on Friday, and the majority of it, the keynote, is around Max Fab. And when I finished, the root, you could hear the air, people audibly, it moved people audibly.
Yeah.
To hear the story. So, it's a team. It's just me as the leader, I put this thing into the team and I just made it, the mark to get to was Max Fab. So yeah, it's maxfabconsulting.com. And, if you hear the story, it's a lot of fun and, certainly a way to work through adversity.
Absolutely. And we're going to put links in the show notes to all of Dave's resources. Dave, thanks for coming back on the show. Thanks for what you're doing to get the word out about organizations being more veteran ready and your support of veteran causes. I really do appreciate that. And then all of the work you're doing on the leadership front as well. So my hat's off to you. I'm honored to have you back on the show. And we'll do it again when the next book comes out. So I'll be excited to have you back.
Well, thanks for being there in my time of need. At any moment during the week, it's awesome. I appreciate you.
Anytime. Absolutely. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over 4 decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast?
Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.